everyone. Welcome back to a special bonus episode of Gateway Episodes. This is a TV podcast where we take a look at an individual episode of a television show and decide if it's something worth stepping through the gateway and getting into. Like I mentioned, this is a bonus episode. We're kind of shadow dropping this out of nowhere. I kind of planned it to do this at the last minute because there is a new show that has just premiered, a show that I have been very excited about for a very long time. And I'm seeing if it's going to be the first two episodes was just launched are going to get me to step through the gateway. And that is, of course, The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. I am your host, Derek McDuff, and graciously joining me today is my good friend Damien. How's it going, man?
Very well. How are you doing over there, my friend?
Not too bad, not too bad. It's a little hot. It's a little hot over here, or a lot hot over here.
Yes.
this heat wave is no joke. But other than that, I'm pretty solid.
Nice, nice.
Before we get too much into this, I'm as probably a lot of people know who listen to me on various podcasts, that I am a very big fan of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and I'm actually reading the books right now. Less of a fan of the Hobbit movies, although, you know, I don't despise them as much as some people do. But what about, and this was, we recently did a podcast together on your show, ranking our things we were most excited for coming up in the fall, and this topped my list over on your show, Can I Say Something? But yes. what is your history, or what is your fandom like for the Tolkien kind of legendarium, yeah. I guess?
Yeah, I've been pretty late to it, actually. When they first came out in the early aughts, I was a young lad. I was like 13, 14 years old. I kind of thought that was dorky stuff, like dorky elves and wizards and all that kind of stuff, and little folk and small folk with the weird feet. And I was like, not sure about that. But slowly got into it, started watching the movies as they came out. I became accessible on TV and DVD, checked those out. And just recently, the last couple of years, I've sort of made a new tradition of watching the extended cut, the Lord of the Rings extended cut, basically every year for the past couple of years. So I'm definitely knee deep, waist deep, getting very deep into Mr. Tolkien's world. So yeah, right now I've been very excited for this show, and I'm really excited to talk about it here.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I definitely try to watch the extended trilogy at least once a year, maybe more if I can. I usually will try and do it at, there's a local theater here, the Frida, this independent theater that does a day once a year where you binge all three. I'm gonna be out of town, unfortunately, this year, so I won't be able to do it, but that's kind of one of my favorite traditions. But yeah, now it's on TV, and it is a whole different animal. So the first two episodes, like they are like to do sometimes, dropped. That would be episode one, A Shadow of the Past, and episode two, Adrift.
Yes.
A lot going on. A big ensemble.
Yes.
lot of lore, a lot of info, it starts literally, you know, at kind of the beginning of the world before the sun has even risen, and Galadriel is kind of the more or less main character, although we do get a number of different characters that we are following. But yeah, man, what were your initial thoughts on this thing?
Yeah, I was really impressed. You can definitely see the money in this, I believe. A lot of different numbers have been floating around about the production and the budget of this show. I believe a lot of it has been discussed about it being close to $1 billion, or actually $1 billion for this show, for the production of it, for the stars, for all of that stuff. And you can definitely see the money in every shot. It is a massive, massive show. It looks amazing, feels amazing. The music is incredible. I love the practical effects. A lot of that stuff, a lot of the money probably went into the practical effects, right? Probably in the costuming and the dwarves and the beards and the hair and all of that. Love the dwarven armor and the dwarven, what are they called? Khazad-dûm, where they live?
Khazad-dûm, yes.
In the deep. Khazad-dûm,
yeah,
yes.
Exactly. I'm like, ooh, I know that place. I think there's a Balrog. Don't delve too greedily there, folks.
Yes, the Minds of Moria. It seems mm-hmm. familiar later yes. on. We'll see that later in the movies. But yeah, I was really, really impressed by the scope and the scale of this. Love Moifer Clark. I mentioned this on my show about how she's in one of my favorite movies from 2019, St. Maud. She's incredible, playing the younger Galadriel, obviously played by Cate Blanchett in the movies. Yeah, I'm really, really impressed overall. What are your overall thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I went into this very cautiously optimistic. Like I said, you know, with the Hobbit movies, I was burned a little bit. Those movies have some their merits, but overall, I don't think they stack up against the Lord of the Rings movies. And I don't know that this will either, but I can tell that there's this some serious effort that went into this. Time and effort and money all went into this, and I think
yeah.
with that, you really give yourself a chance to succeed. And so far, It's too soon to say, but I think that things are looking to be on the right track. And you brought up all the practical effects and how incredible it looks. Because they do, obviously, there's a lot of, you know, computer effects as well, but they blend really seamlessly. And just thinking of The Hobbit once again, those movies look so... They look bad. They look very yeah. glossy. All of the orcs and stuff, like, everything is CGI. Everything is CGI, and you don't yeah. have the practical stuff that looks so good. And this really is putting a lot of practical stuff. You can tell there's a lot of money that went into this. There was a huge bidding war to even get the rights. There was like, yep. you know, however many hundreds of, I can't remember the exact figure, but a large sum of money was paid before even a shot was done. They spent years writing it. You can tell that they are pulling all these different things from the Tolkien lore, because this is set hundreds of years before the Lord of the Rings. It's just Sauron is kind of he was the lieutenant of this other big bad Morgoth, and they're like, oh, is Sauron still out there? Oh, no, don't worry about him. And just, I really like Moifred Clark's performance. I think that you are yeah. spot on in talking about her, but there's a lot of other great performances, people that I'm really curious to see what happens more, you know, that you've got those kind of proto hobbits, the Harfoots, I think they're called, and
yes.
Nori and all of them. And then you have the guy who, like, Claire Danes himself in Stardust from Outer Space just fell. so I'm really curious to see what happens with that and the whole elven and human romance. I think that is really interesting. That character really intrigued me. And they are setting a lot of stuff up. You can tell, like, these first episodes, none of the characters are interacting. These are very, so far, separate storylines, which I think works yeah. well. I love a big ensemble like this. Whenever I talk about all of my favorite shows and stuff, it's, you know, usually ensembles. Lord of the Rings, obviously, was a really big ensemble, and I'm curious to see what they do with it and where they go with this big world and how they build up and how much they're going to connect to the movies. And if they are going to connect to the movies, you know, you have the second, I mean, spoilers for all of this, the second episode yeah. ends with Galadriel. She's kind of adrift, the second episode adrift, obviously, which I'm like, that was an interesting plan. What were you planning to do, swim across the entire ocean when she jumps yeah. off the boat before she gets to the Undying Lands? But I'm like, all right, yes. she gets found by hot guy in a raft who just confirms her, where he's like, yeah, you're looking for Sauron and orcs? Well, they just happen to be down here, just so you know. And then I think that they find that bigger boat, so I think maybe one of those guys is a Isildur, or they're going to go meet the Numenoreans yes. and go into that whole thing and see Aragorn's ancestors and all that. So yeah, a lot of really cool stuff that definitely is drawn me in quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got a lot of expectations to meet, right? Because we're in a post Game of Thrones world with all of those massive battles that we've seen on TV for the past decade. You know, the Battle of the Bastards, Hardhome, these massive, massive battles that we've seen so far. And so it's like, well, you got a lot to live up to, and sort of like we've been I just had it in my brain. But we've been spoiled, you know, for the past like 10 to 15 years of really good looking stuff. You know, video games for the past 10 years have really come up to the level of things like the original Lord of the Rings video games, you know, Tomb Raider, Uncharted, stuff like that are now the graphical fidelity are now meeting the things that we saw back in 2001 in those original trilogy where, you know, back then that was the best looking thing ever. Really, there's nothing comparable. No TV shows, no video games. That was the only thing you could go and see a large scale battle like that and a large scale world being built like that. That was the only place to see it. Now we're in a post Game of Thrones world, and I think I had a lot of expectations to meet compared to something like that. I'm curious for you, for somebody that watched Game of Thrones, did it meet it or exceed it?
Honestly, yeah, I didn't finish Game of Thrones. I watched I caught up to where the books were, because didn't want to spoil the end of the books, even though I did get spoiled. But and it's interesting because this right off the bat is so expensive and elaborate, and we're in such a different landscape when it comes to TV now. Like you mentioned, it used to be you have to go to the movies, but with the rise of prestige TV and Game of Thrones being a big part of that, and you also have stuff like Band of Brothers and all these big kind of and Ariel, my co-host on Underrated, brought up a good point on an episode we just recorded that won't be out for a little while, but talking about how epics have kind of disappeared from film. I was talking about how they disappeared from film, and she was like, well, they've kind of made their way onto TV. And you see with this, that is very much the case. This big fantasy epic. This is truly an epic, and it feels that way right off the bat. I mean, we don't have any huge battles or anything. And it's interesting to watch because, like, if you watch the first season of Game of Thrones, they did not have that budget. They did not have the money to put into it that something like this, or even the Game of Thrones spinoff, which I probably want to touch on a little bit. I think it's Dance of Dragons, is that what it's called?
The House of Dragons.
House of Dragons, thank you. Yeah, the book is Dance of Dragons. Yes. But yeah, the first season of Game of Thrones is pretty sparse, and then it became kind of that big hit. And like, there's one I remember seeing in, it's like with one of the last episodes in Game of Thrones season one, where there's this big battle, and in the book it's described so viscerally and interesting, and then the show, just Tyrion gets knocked out at the beginning, and he wakes up and they're like, wow, that was a crazy battle, because they didn't have the money to shoot the battle.
yes, I remember that, yeah.
But then as the show became bigger and bigger, and they were able to just like, by season, I think 8 was the last season, there's this really interesting documentary about the shooting of it, and how it was like just an entire city to just film the last season and how expansive that was. And now you are kind of having Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings as these competing historical fantasy things. They are like dropped weeks apart. HBO kind of was like, oh yeah, you're gonna drop your Lord of the Rings show, we're gonna drop our Game of Thrones spinoff right now. It's gonna be our prequel to it, and it's right off the bat that is very expensive, very epic. And they're not even trying to hide that they are like directly competing. Like a Game of Thrones is trying to shoot them down, because right after the day that these two episodes of Rings of Power dropped, HBO was just like, oh, we're just going to upload the first episode of our show free to YouTube. You can watch House of the Dragon now on YouTube for free. So they are really, really going for each other. And I'll watch House of the Dragon at some point, but I don't have that same interest and history with it that I do with something like this. Have you seen any House of the Dragon yet?
Yes. Yeah, I just, as we're recording, the third episode just dropped. Mm-hmm. I just checked out. And yeah, it's on the same level. I think what people are going to get with Game of Thrones is like, here's your daddy's, here's the daddy's fantasy, here's the adult fantasy. Then here, you can sort of, you know, sit around the fire with the kids, with the Rings of Power. So I think that is something where you can sort of put a differentiating sort of, you can compartmentalize the Lord of the Rings separate from Game of Thrones, where you can actually bring in the family, bring in the kids, and be like, hey guys, let's sit around the old hearth and check out Rings of Power, as opposed to Game of Thrones, which I won't say much about the newest episode, but there is some there's some bodies being separated in ways that bodies should not be separated, so I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, Game of Thrones definitely was well known for a lot of sex and a lot of very visceral violence, you know, like you said, you won't be really seeing in Lord of the Rings. But I do think it is so interesting to see how really TV has changed just in the last 5-10 years at most, largely because of HBO. But fantasy series were not something necessarily new. Another episode that I recorded for season 2 of Gateway episodes when that drops is on the 10th Kingdom. And if you look at that, like that's a solid show. Like it's a solid fantasy show. It's got like Rutger Hauer and stuff like that in it. But if you look at that, it is clear that not only is that a show from like the year 2000, but it is also something where they were every shot of it working around a budget. Even though it is this big fantasy world, like there is some rough CG. They do the sets feel very, very small. It's not like these big dwarven just things that look like they go on forever. And it's like, oh my gosh. Like that was one thing. Like the sets in this, holy shit. Like they looked so amazing to the point where even with like my semi-trained eye, I couldn't tell where the reality ended and where like the CG would fill in. Where something like even The Hobbit, you're like, oh, okay, this is very, very CG. So, yeah.
They had a lot to, with The Hobbit stuff was like, didn't he film it like a higher frame rate so everything just looked really fake?
That was, yeah, he did that. I mean, I didn't even watch it in the high frame rate. And I think another problem with The Hobbit movies that this doesn't experience is that he kind of had to do it very quickly. It was being written and rewritten as Peter Jackson was working on them. It was originally supposed to be for Guillermo del Toro, which, oh my God, I would have loved to see a Guillermo del Toro Hobbit movie. Yeah. Can you fucking imagine? But he dropped out, and so they're like, all right, well, Tolkien, do you want to do this? And he was, or Jackson, do you want to do this? And he's like, well, yeah, I guess so, since nobody else will do it. We got to get these, we got to do all this stuff, you know, kind of, you know, got to do it quick because A, Warner Brothers is breathing down our neck, and B, we've got some older actors here. We might have to be quick and shoot these things while we still have someone to play Saruman.
Yeah.
So not to be too you know, depressing about it, but
yeah.
So yeah, it felt rushed, and it also suffered from the fact that it was shot as two movies, and then they were like, oh, actually, just make it three movies, shoot all this extra stuff, and do it quickly and do it cheap. And
yeah, not
and
great.
You know, that is always going to cause some problems. So
yeah,
hopefully with this, with the amount of time that they put into it, it seems like they have a lot of planning. Of course, TV is a very different beast. You know, there is the plan, you know, your plan. People always talk about, oh, well, you know, they didn't plan for the end of this. They didn't plan for this. Well, TV, you never know what's going to happen. Your characters grow and change in ways. Like, for example, Better Call Saul, they thought he was going to become Saul by the end of season one. And he doesn't really become Saul until, I mean, incrementally, maybe you could say season three, but maybe not really until season six. Like, the end of the last few episodes of the last season is when he really becomes that character. And Kim Wexler was supposed to be a small character. She became bigger. So with TV shows, you kind of have to kind of adapt and see what happens, maybe have a general plan. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the Lord of the Rings series does, and if they're able to roll with the punches like that.
Yeah, because I was just looking out, doing some little digging on the show, and exactly what they're adapting, because going into this, not knowing, not having read any, like, the extracurricular, the tangential books in the Lord of the Rings world, the Unfinished Tales or the Silmarillion, I thought that was some of the stuff they're pulling from. Apparently, Amazon doesn't own the rights to those things. So, for you, do you know exactly where these things are going, speaking of, you know, where series are headed?
Not really, because it is, I know vaguely a lot of Tolkien lore from reading the books and just kind of just being interested in it in general. So I know, like, oh, when they mention the Cimmerils, I'm like, I know what that is. I know who Morgoth is. I know why there wasn't a sunrise and, like, what the tree, because, like, there was originally just, like, these two trees, and it's this whole thing. It's really complex, and it's a lot. It's like, you know, the same reason that with Dune, they had to streamline it so much, because there's so much lore in, you know, Frank Herbert's Dune stuff that they had to just give you the essentials pretty much for the movie. And I think it's the same thing with this, where it's like, yeah, we can't just tell you all of the stuff, because Tolkien would just be like, all right, let me just spend 5 pages talking about how the gods were singing a song before time, and Morgoth decided to sing a different song. So, I think, yeah. I really do not know where this is going, other than I think that it's probably going to build up to, you know, the construction of the rings and the kind of prologue for that first movie. And something that was really interesting that I thought was mentioned was in the, you know, when the High King is sending Galadriel away and he's talking to Elrond, and he says, oh, he basically said something along the lines of her trying to stop Mordor or Sauron is what's going to cause him. Like sometimes the flame that tries to extinguish the fire ends up making it so much bigger. I'm like, okay, because I know she is a ring bearer. So like, is she going to, in some ways, in trying to stop the rise of Sauron, give rise to his power? So I'm really curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah, some of the questions, you know, getting to some of the, you know, where are we going with this, with the show? Where is the show headed? Mm-hmm. Do you have any theories about who the stranger is that fell out of the sky, crashed into the earth? He made this giant fireball, this giant crater in the earth. It was all fire, but then one of the Hardfoots falls into it. It's not hot. So they alluded to the fact that whenever there is deep evil around, fire isn't hot. So it's definitely got to be some sort of evil creature, right?
Yeah, and like the whole thing with the fireflies dying and that scene being kind of ominous, I think he might be a wizard. It seems like he's kind of wizard-esque and just kind of, I know the wizards are kind of came from the stars. I don't know enough. Like I was talking with a friend and that was kind of her theory, which, and it made a lot of sense to me. So I think that's what it might be. I think he's definitely one of that same... they're basically the kind of lesser gods, the wizards, Sauron, a lot of those guys are of the same, not the Witch King, but like a lot of those guys are the same, you know, kind of ilk, with varying degrees of power. So I think he might be, I think the Illistar, I'm probably mispronouncing that. There's some nerd yelling at me right now. but yeah. One of those guys, if I had to guess, because I think they are kind of vaguely celestial. That would be my theory. I don't know. Did you have a theory?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just did some vague research into it. And, you know, it's obviously they got to be leading towards something more evil tilted. But some people were saying it could be one of the five blue wizards. They came to Middle Earth at a certain point at a time around the Second Age. And one of the ones that they mentioned it could be was Redagast. He's a Maiar of Yavanna.
He's the brown wizard. We get to see him in The Hobbit, but... Tolkien,
he's in The Hobbit, yeah.
Yeah, Tolkien notoriously wrote almost nothing about the blue. He's like, yeah, there was Saruman, there was Gandalf, Radagast. They show up in the books, and he's like, there was blue wizards, and they kind of. He basically just says they failed, and that's all he really says on them.
Yeah. So what they were, you know, the show is obviously has tangential connections with some of the books. They have, you know, not enough rights to a lot of them. And so what they're doing is, even with the original trilogy, they sort of compressed, you know, the time period of the books. So it's definitely possible that they could be doing that here and sort of redoing some re-canon work here. Some of that stuff can be going on here as well. So, you know, they could be taking just some different stories and some different literature that Tolkien wrote and saying, yeah, well, he didn't write a lot about this person's life in this period. So maybe this did happen, right?
Yeah, I feel like, this show is going to be kind of set in the stuff that he didn't fill in, because so much of his stuff even was filled in after his death by his son, Christopher. Like, he just kind of took all these different writings, like the Silmarillion was finished because he needed to publish it by a certain date, and his dad had all these notes, so he just kind of like threw what he could together. So it seems like there are so many just lost tales and different writings and stuff, and he just scribbled notes about some characters, and so they're probably gonna pull a lot from that and whatever they can. And there is so much backstory just in the actual pages of the Lord of the Rings, because they'll talk about like, oh yeah, well, the hobbits came from this place and they did this, and so there's a lot to pull from. A lot of spaces in between, like just characters that get briefly mentioned, and it's like, yeah, well, that could be this guy, that the blue wizard that barely gets mentioned. We can make a whole thing out of him. So,
yeah,
yeah. So, definitely, some interesting characters, and they make allusions to like specific things like, oh yeah, there's only been twice where there's been a romance between an elf and a human, and you're like, okay, cool, like he definitely would talk had those stories about that. And so with all that said, you know, the question of the show is always, and it's usually one person asking the other, because it's usually a show that is finished, or at least, you know, has been in progress for a while. This is the first time we're doing it with a new show. But are these two episodes enough to get you to step through the gate where you think this would be a show that you would kind of want to watch all the way through, or at least come back to week for a time?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is going to be probably the show I'm going to be watching along with the new Game of Thrones. Love being part of the zeitgeist, the thing everyone's talking about at the same time. Love being part of that. Love podding with you about all this stuff. So, yeah, definitely we'll be sticking with it.
Nice, nice. Yeah, and I obviously am going to be that too. I don't have a ton of stuff that I watch week to week to like binge stuff, but now that Saul is over, I kind of have that gap. Like, you know, She-Hulk is kind of filling that a little bit, but really this has been a show that I've been anticipating for so long, and there's no way I'm not gonna watch every single episode of this. I'm gonna probably try and watch it, you know, the day it comes out. Some other shows have been more lackadaisical on, and I'm like, all right, well, I'll watch it, I'll get around to it, they're talking about whatever. I'll see the memes. I'm like, all right, maybe I should watch this now. But this show, there is no way I'm missing it. I am so curious to see what they do with this. I think it's very smart of them to set up all of these different plot lines and to give us all these different characters, because one thing that I really appreciate, especially about the second Lord of the Rings movie, is you build and build and build tension in one plot. And then when it reaches its peak, you can switch to someone else and have them. It's like, all right, you have your release and you go up to this new person. All right, and then what are they doing? What are they doing? What are they doing? All right, now we're back to him. And it's something that also even the Game of Thrones books do really well, where it's every chapter is a different character. And it's a great, great storytelling device. I think because it is on Amazon and it doesn't have to, follow a lot of the traditional norms of storytelling or broadcast TV, it does have a little more freedom to take its time with, yeah, we are going to introduce these characters and not have them cross over. Not really, other than just generally like Mordor is out, or Sauron is out there and he's bad and we want to get him, not really have a direction and just kind of have all of the characters be seemingly pulled towards this vague idea. I really want to see how that all pays off.
Yeah, definitely. And just, one more sort of mystery, or one more, like, what is this? What's in the box type mystery? King Durin opens the box in Khazad Dûn next to the Prince Durin. They look at it and they like, big glowing thing. Do we think that's Mithril? What do we think that is?
Yeah, that makes sense. It might be Mithril. It might be Marcellus Wallace's soul.
Yes, exactly.
I'm really curious to see what that would be, because, you know, it's interesting because, yeah, we hear about Durin, like, that's a name that gets thrown around a lot in the Lord of the Rings movies and in The Hobbits. They always talk about Durin's Day, and, you know, it's cool to see these characters. That was one thing, too, I forgot to mention, but I fucking loved that bromance, like, between fucking nerdy-ass Elrond and his buddy who's a dwarf, and I love that he's like, it's been 20 years, and it's like, that may seem like not a lot for you, laddie, but it's a lot for me. And I also love that the dwarves are all fucking Scottish in this. That's great. But I love a good bromance, and, you know, I wasn't super sold on Elrond at first and his thing with Galadriel, which I'm like, I don't know if they're just supposed to be besties. I hope they're not building a romance with them, but him and Durin, that part really, really was like, all right, I'm into this. That and the elven romance was maybe the elven human romance was maybe my favorite thing. I guess I just liked the kind of like, here's elves and here's humans and here's an elf and here's a dwarf and we're coming together. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, because like we say all the time when we talk about movies or TV shows or books, it's not about the battles, it's not about the big bombastic fights. It's not about any of that. At the end of the day, it has to be about people and their relationships with each other. And that, like you said, that conversation was really great and heartfelt and emotional about he's saying, you know, 20 years, that's a long time for you, but you know, you missed my wedding and the birth of my child. And so that's the stuff that sort of brings people back watching week to week is the investments in these interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, I could not have said it better myself. I know that some people have been kind of saying like, oh, this is so amazing looking. The characters aren't really hitting. Yeah. I can't really agree with that. And I think it's just too soon to tell. I think I've liked a lot of the stuff that I've seen. I think we both did, like we mentioned. Where it goes, I'm not sure. But yeah, I that is absolutely right. You need to have, it can be the coolest sci-fi world, look amazing. But if you don't care about the actual, I was going to say human, but you know, the people in it, then it's meaningless and it's nothing. And Yeah.
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts here before we wrap up on The Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power?
We'll definitely be getting into it week to week. Definitely be watching it. Let me see. I think there was something else. Great acting, great score. Yeah, everybody fix your TVs. Don't watch this with motion smoothing. Saw a lot of, speaking of complaints, saw a lot of that. It's like, why does this show look like this? It's like, well, fix your TV. Get in there and turn this motion smoothing off. Turn your contrast down, brightness up. You'll be fine.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I just looked it up and it looks like that they've got a plan for 5 seasons, which I think is a good amount. Like, I think that's really less than that can be good, but you kind of always want a little bit more. And once you get past 5 seasons, it's like, all right, you're really stretching it now. This story needs to end. So I think that's a good plan, especially if it's, you know, shorter seasons, not absorbent. Like, this is going to be an 8 episode season. So good stuff. I'm definitely really excited to see where this goes and to step through the gateway. But like I mentioned, this is, this is a bonus episode here, and we will be coming out with Season 2 of Gateway episodes. Me and Damien are going to be talking about another show. We're going to be talking about Devs on Season 2. We're talking about miniseries for that. Yep. So I'm getting really excited to do that. I'm in the process of recording and editing all of that stuff. Waiting to hit 10 patrons on my Patreon or on my me and my friend's Patreon that we do for all our podcasts, Undercast Company. We're at 7 right now, so we're getting close. So if you want to hear some more, we're already releasing some of those episodes for patrons, which, of course, Damien is one of our first patrons, so thank you. Glad to have you on. So, of course, we do that. We're looking forward to more episodes of that. Like I mentioned, me and Damien do another podcast. We do Can I Say Something, which is, you know, your show. Damien, I don't know if you wanted to tell the good people about that.
Yeah, so, you know, week to week, we'll be doing counting down and going through the most popular stuff of the week, popular movies coming out, fresh, hot takes for hot movies. We'll be talking about this show. I'm watching the Game of Thrones show. So if you want to see, you know, a little bit more of this week to week, speculation or impressions of the shows as they're coming out, check out Can I Say Something anywhere you get the podcast, Apple Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Google Podcast, I believe it's called that now. Spotify. I know a lot of my downloads come from there. So check out Can I Say Something over there.
Yeah, I always have a ton of fun on that show with you, man. That is the best. Yeah. And then just one more show I wanted to mention before we wrap up. That's kind of the main Undercast Company show, which is Underrated, where we talk about underrated movies. So I always have a lot of fun with that. We are right now about to launch our mini-series on underrated films from the past called Vintage Collection, so we got to talk about some cool older films, but we have a really deep catalog for that. It's on all the same podcasting apps that Damien just mentioned, so check all of that stuff out. We would love to have you guys. If you liked what you've heard from both of us here, check us out on those places as well.
Absolutely.
And I'll see you guys all next time. Thank you again, Damien.